Osiris.
We're mass communicating. We're mass
to Touchdowns All Day. This is your host, Max Dawson. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been threatening to do this for a while. It is finally here, the first Touchdowns All Day listener feedback episode. 424-666-SIYD. It's the number to call. You can also get us on Instagram, at BarberShreds, at FY Maxwell. Same thing on X. You can hit us on Facebook, Discord. There are so many ways to get in touch with us. And we have been telling you for so long that we want to hear from you. And to prove it, we are going to let you have the floor in this episode. I sat down with Barber and Magner right after we recorded our Why We Dance Tour Leg One Jams of the Tour episode, and we answered your questions. Before we get to them, please make sure you are heading over to discobiscuits.com/shows for the latest announcements about everything that the Biscuits have going on in 2024. So many shows being announced, festivals, announcements coming every couple of days. You never know when the next batch of shows are going to drop. So the best way to be in the know, click on that, follow the Disco Biscuits link, sign up for the mailing list, be amongst the first to know. All right, enough for me. Let's get to your questions. The listener feedback episode. Welcome back, guys. I am here at Barber's studio, joined by Barber and Aaron, and we are going to listen to your messages, read your emails, answer your questions. We have been talking about a listener feedback show for some time now. Now is the time. We always say mass communicating at the beginning of every episode of Touchdowns All Day, and I've said this in the past. It is a conversation, not a monologue. We love hearing from you. So if you want to reach out, 424-666-SIYD, that's 7493. You can also hit us on Instagram, on Facebook. You can get us on X. There are so many different ways to reach us. Please keep the questions coming, the comments, the feedback, and we'll get around to these listener feedback episodes every now and then. But first things first, I'm going to drop a voicemail. This is from Mikey.
I do have a serious problem on the home front. I have two young kids, toddlers, and they pretty much exclusively want to listen to the Biscuits. Maybe we'll mix in a little bit Raffy, but my wife is the daughter of a music teacher, and she's very distraught over this, a little bit worried. And then on top of that, the kids refer to the Biscuits as... you know, they want to listen to Uncle Barber. And so I'm worried that I have possibly confused my three, almost four-year-old into thinking that Barber is his uncle. You know, has wanted to go to a show, which isn't going to happen, but maybe, I don't know, maybe the Boston soundtrack or something like that. Try to find a way to get him in there. You guys are crushing it. Keep it up. Max, love what you're doing with the podcast. Barber, love what the Biscuits are doing. Keep it up, guys. See you in a couple shows this tour. Rock on.
Okay. So Mikey doesn't so much ask a question as make a statement. Some of these calls will be that, but I've got a question based on Mikey's call. And that is, how young is too young to come to a Biscuits show? Now, Mark Brownstein has weighed in on this recently with regards to Fish. He said, and I paraphrase, I didn't bring my oldest child to a Fish show until he was 18, and I'm in the Disco Biscuits. What do you guys think? John River comes to Biscuits shows all the time. The Magner boys I've seen at many a Biscuits show. But what is the appropriate move here when your kids are starting to listen to the Biscuits? They've got a, you know, they're 3 years old. They've got a little flat brim. They want to go on tour. They're curious about the balloons. What do you guys as parents do?
Your kids are older than mine. You should probably handle this one.
Listen, man,
It's a really amazing circus that like we've surrounded ourselves with. And it's really fun to like expose kids to the amazing environment that we get to frequent. You know, it's just magical. Some of these festivals that I've brought my kids to, it hasn't been that many. My wife and I have said since we had kids that our kids will never know what Camp Bisco is. You know, we didn't want like, they're like, I want to go to the water park. Like, so like, we just don't even tell our kids what it is. But yeah, I mean, I think that they should be exposed to the awesomeness that is Bisco, you know?
Yeah.
100%. And the songs are very kid friendly. Also, you know, River goes to shows all the time, loves it. You know, Bear Baruch was at a show. He's younger than River. It seems like if you can kind of navigate, you know, some of the, you know, keep yourself in like an area where everybody's kind of knows that your kid is with you and help you control and monitor your child during the show. You know, I put River on Joey's shoulders for the set, for the whole set. You know, you need a Joey. You need a Joey. If you have a Joey, then your River can go to the show.
Joey is our resident daycare center. If you do have kids, he is very well vetted and will love to put them on his shoulders. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. So not just songwriting collaborator with John and Aaron and all around Biscuits coach, but also available for your childcare needs. Reach out to Joey Friedman.
A real Renaissance man.
Yeah. A real Mr. Mom.
He's on Instagram. You just send him. Also, by the way, when your kid's at the show, it changes your show experience. If it doesn't change your show experience, then that's cool, but it probably will. So you potentially should, you know, weigh that. You know, you don't want to bring your kid, like we leave River home with a babysitter all the time on tour because I like having him on tour. But once like 4 o'clock comes around, I mean, he goes home, maybe 5 o'clock, he goes home to the babysitter for the night.
Maybe the VIP set is where the kids come out.
Kill it.
I mean, what if we had like a dedicated set, you know, in that VIP slot, right?
Yeah.
You know, comes like, here's a half hour mini biscuit show.
I do like the idea of a family friendly afternoon set. You know, think of, you know, first of all, one of the other songwriting collaborators that, as we've discovered in recent episodes of the podcast, is in fact a 4 year old. You know, there are songs that are child friendly. We've got Dino Baby.
Kids get music. There's no question.
Definitely. Well, guys, a question that gets asked so often is, well, Courtney, I'll let Courtney ask it.
I was wondering if there is any plans for a reprint of the classical set vinyl for the 10-year anniversary. The people need it. All right. Thank you, guys. Have a great rest of your day.
Now, are you guys aware that the classical set goes for ungodly amounts of money?
I've heard
Discogs?
1,000. I've heard 1,000. I haven't heard any other number.
It's low. Worth every penny.
Do we...
Should be 10 grand.
Do you guys, like, have a box of them that you're hoarding for speculative prices for when it's time for the kids to go to college or anything like that? Or do
I'm
we
glad
need to-
that you brought this up. No, unfortunately, is the answer. But yes, is the answer for you. You asked me just like last month or 2 months ago. You were like, hey, how do I get a copy of the classical set?
Right, because I don't have one and I don't want to pay $1,500.
I found one for you.
Yay.
In my basement.
Really?
So there is one more and it is, you know, sealed and down there. And
wow.
Yeah, now I just need to remember where I found it the first time, like a month ago. But I have it for you, man.
There's probably a box
and
next to that.
And you can sell it for an ungodly amount of money.
Well, I'm not against that idea. I just want to think about it more. I would like to have my own copy. I listened to it the other day and was pretty blown away at considering we threw it into a show in the middle of a tour and how hard those songs are to just kind of recreate when you don't do classical music for a living.
Yeah, and listening to that on vinyl, you know, it is just like...
It's so, yeah.
It makes sense, right? Yeah. Aside from like, yeah, vinyl sounds better, right? It just like makes sense putting that on record on. Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, I dig it too.
Well, we've got the Revolution in Motion double LP coming out March 29th on the 180-gram special colored vinyl.
Oh, it looks beautiful. I saw those mock-ups.
I think that's the next collector's item. I think that if you were on the sidelines and didn't get your copy of the classical set, you want to get the Revolution in Motion vinyl.
Of course. I mean, if you listen to vinyl, you have to get the Revolution in Motion vinyl, right? Because what other albums are coming out on vinyl? It's the only new album.
Yeah.
There's no other new albums being released this year on vinyl. I looked on the chart. No.
It's true. Record Store Day isn't a thing because we're releasing Revolution in Motion. So everybody's like, cool. You guys
did you
got
listen
this
to it? Isn't there a pressing that you listen to?
There is a test pressing.
How'd that go?
Which I have not listened to yet. I came home from Florida and I saw that they were there. And I have not listened to it yet.
Wow.
But they are there. I do have the test pressings.
Well, that'll be a collector's item.
I would say let's listen to it here, but I don't have any gasoline for my record player. So I don't know what I don't know how to turn it on anymore.
Do you have coal?
Coal.
We can do coal.
I think it works like coal, yeah. I had a record player that was built into a cabinet, and it had it would slow down and speed up, which was kind of cool, but it was also...
What would slow down and speed up?
The record.
Oh, I got it. Right.
Yeah, it was cool, but it was more of a party trick than it was a listening experience.
Kobe, our good friend Kobe Waldvogel, has always wanted you guys to do the Haymaker sets from 2002 on vinyl.
I can speak to that.
Please do.
So it's been on our radar, right? And there is an anniversary of Haymaker. Is it when is the anniversary?
I think we may have missed it.
We might have just missed it, right?
2002.
So this was right. So 22 was probably when we were talking about it.
Yeah.
But so 24 could work.
We don't have the multi-tracks, but we have like a soundboard and we have audience, so we could kind of like fuse those together and they sound good enough, but it's broken up. There's like a section that's missing or a section that is mixed, that has different sources than the other sections, so it doesn't feel as complete. You know, that doesn't mean that we can't figure out a way to, you know, work with that in some capacity, but that's kind of what prevented it from taking the logical next step of just, yeah, let's put it out. Let's have a mix and put it out.
Yeah. Well, who knows? Maybe there'll be some more live biscuits on vinyl in all of our futures. Guys, this is a question that came in over Discord from our friend Scott McClintock. He said, is there a lyric in a song that you don't sing, but that you wish you did? Or a lyric that you love so much that you always sing it in your head or even lip sync it when your fellow bandmate is actually singing it?
The only thing I can think of for this is Mark has another chorus for Portal to an Empty Head, I think. And maybe even, you know, he has that other thing that he sings.
Like the response line?
Yeah, the response line. I don't have anything like that in my songs necessarily. What about you? Do you got any?
I mean, the first thing that came to mind, which is sort of like this, is Magellan. We kind of have an inside joke of Johnold, right? John Lesser. So Johnold is great. He's a superstar. Right. And what was the tail end?
And if he says something cool, you got to act.
Says something smart. Da, yeah. Da, da, da. Right. And then it was like, Mozart is great.
Yeah. We used to sing this to Johnald when he was like, you know, he was working for us, but we were making no money. So we would sing Johnald is great.
That was the reason
him,
we had this.
To get him to cheer up a little bit about working for
about
this band.
How poor you all were.
Yeah, about working for this band.
We don't
band.
Have money, but we're going to sing for you.
Yes, which is, you know.
In case you weren't tired of us singing all night long, we're going to do it in the van while we're driving 10 hours.
I think that you guys not singing to him might have been the real incentive. There's a whole history of kind of inside joke shadow biscuits lyrics. There's the Chris Colarco chant,
yes,
for Shimmy.
Chris Colarco.
Chris Colarco.
I love that.
All right, back to the phones. 424-666-SIYD.
Yo, it's D-Rock from Biscuits Running Club. Just want to say, loving the frequency of the podcast, loving all the new songs. Last 2 years have been amazing. Can't wait to see what this one has to hold. Keep going, boys. Love it.
So, John, the Biscuits Running Club. They also reached out via Discord. They use Biscuits music as the soundtrack for their workouts. I am with them on that. Biscuits are what I listen to in the gym. Best workout music ever. John, you mentioned on our last episode that you switched up your workout routine on the Peloton from Peloton and Zelda to Peloton and Biscuits jams. What's it like listening to the Biscuits? What's it like listening to yourself while you're doing your workouts?
I like it. I the one problem of playing Zelda and being on the Peloton is it's a lot of like low energy biking because you're busy playing a video game and you kind of like got to pedal slow and like try and, you know, you're in a battle with someone with a sword and a whip or something like that, right? So you can't really stand up and really get a workout in. When the Biscuits are on, I put the Peloton on full blast and I stand up and I go for like 10 or 20 minutes and then I go down for a few minutes and then I go back up again. So it's the Biscuits are such a high energy listening experience that it makes that process easier. So I kind of like it. I feel like listening to the shows nowadays, especially, but probably always, is like something that I'm trying to do more of. This podcast was designed basically around that concept. And I'm just trying to do it more and more in different ways. It's really great. I mean, my Peloton workouts are breaking records when I listen to the Biscuits, like most, you know, miles per minute, highest resistance, like all the stuff.
Man, I just listen to the daily, you know, I was listening to Andy Frasco's podcast earlier today. Like I like to,
while you work out.
Yeah. I can't do that distraction.
I can't listen to Andy Frasco while I work out. I'll end up like in the bar in the lobby drinking Jameson with the people behind the counter.
It was Bruce Hornsby. So I was like, I was nerding out a little bit.
I'll like be smoking a cigarette on the treadmill, listening to Andy.
On the same topic.
Hey, Max and Barbara, this is Joey Lichter, longtime fan, first-time caller. I wanted to ask if you guys have thought about putting out a Disco Biscuits workout video. I think it's about time. All right, thanks a lot.
Finally, a serious recommendation.
That's pretty good. I mean, we should outsource that, right? Yeah. Like, we don't need to conduct the workout video, yeah. But no, that might sell better.
He does not want to watch some hot women doing workouts to the Biscuits.
He wants to watch us. And Alan.
Yes.
You know what it should be?
Leg warmers, headbands.
Here's the thing. Nobody's going to watch more than 10 seconds of us doing a workout routine. So after second 10, the video could just be blank. You know what I mean? Like we could sell an hour-long workout video, but we only have to make 20 seconds.
We know how to loop, you know? Yes.
Nobody's going to watch past second. We literally sell through 20 seconds. We get in our little leotards or whatever.
Our leotards.
Whatever you wear. We do a couple of things. One, two, three, cut. Hour-long video made. The rest is just white. You know, it's just like a blank screen. No one will watch that far.
Morph Alan into Jane Fonda.
Exactly.
Okay, serious question, though. How do you guys stay in shape when you're on tour?
Lots of different ways. I went on a lot of hikes last year, or this past year, because we were just in some beautiful places. And I think that it's just about making sure that you move your body every day in some capacity, you know, and it could even be something stupid, you know, jumping up and down in your hotel room or, you know, doing some push-ups and sit-ups, whatever, just something. And I find that that's something that I need to check in with myself. Like, okay, I didn't do it yesterday or the day before. And, you know, it's like, you just have to do it and monitor how much you've been sleeping. Cause it's all a lack of sleep, you know, and monitor what you've been eating because most likely it's been some sort of variation of crap. So like, you need a personal barometer to rein it all in, and making sure you move your body is a big part of that.
Barbara, how about you?
Well, I agree with Aaron 100%. You got to move your body. But this last tour, I just stopped eating because I wasn't moving my body. So I was just like, well, I clearly don't need any energy. So I just stopped eating. That's another way that I'm going to experiment with more in the future. But essentially, yeah, you just got to, it's great if you can find awesome outdoor hikes that are picturesque and gives you a vibe of where you are.
Yep.
But sometimes it's hard when you're on the road to know where you even are.
Yeah, man. It centers you, you know? And plus, like, if you have the ability to be in Montana right next to, you know, Glacier National Park, or even just to the left.
Yeah.
You know, or even Tahoe, and just like walk around amidst those like trees and walk down to the lake and, you know, Santa Cruz. We had a day off in Santa Cruz and I didn't really feel like doing much, but I walked all of Ocean Drive, whatever that thing is called, Lakeshore Drive. What is it? We live there. We should know that.
Ocean Drive is fine.
Okay. It's not, but it's close enough.
I know what you mean. So you mean where Lost Boys was shot?
Yeah. Walked that whole thing all the way up to Natural Bridges. It's like a 5-mile walk from like the very downtown Santa Cruz all the way up to Natural Bridges. And it was the butterfly migration. So Mark and I did this whole walk and then we got to Natural Bridges and, you know, it was really cool. Monarch butterflies flying all around. And then we couldn't get an Uber for some reason at sunset at Natural Bridges. And I walked to the Mexican restaurant and then got a camarones burrito. Supreme.
Mm. Very good.
Way to pack on some calories on your workout.
I mean, you needed
way to carb load at the end of the workout.
Well, that's the upside of more West Coast touring. You get to be in beautiful locations. You're not like you're in Harrisburg. You're not going to like walk under a freeway underpass before the show. You're out in Tahoe or on a mountain, or you're in Santa Cruz by the ocean. So
Harrisburg is a nice little like river walk, though. You know, it's something. It's something. That's
I used
my
to
point.
Run the river walk in Scranton. I used to Camp Bisco's. There's like a river with like a path along the river. I used to run that in the mornings before Camp Bisco. So, yeah, I mean, look, you can find something in most places, but it always interferes with how much sleep you're getting.
Right.
Yes. Because that's the trade-off. Yes. That's the trade-off is, am I waking up early today to do this thing that's good for me? And waking up early is not good for you. So you have to really, it's a real tough balance.
Right.
Well, Barbara, you just referred to the fast. And we had a rant at one of the recent episodes about how when you were sick, your approach to healing yourself was to stop eating. Pretzel on the Robot Savers Discord wrote in and asked, can we hear more about Barber's fasting? Also, I'd be curious to know about his vitamins and his stack of supplements. This is fascinating shit. Can you talk a little bit about your approach?
I am an expert faster. I've read books on the subject, so I don't necessarily think this is a do what I say, follow me down this pathway moment. Fasting is very, very carefully done when I do it. I know what I'm doing. I know how to get in and out of it. I've read the Bible of fasting multiple times.
What is that?
What's the Bible of fasting? I can't remember what it's called. Hold on, let me just Google Bible of Fasting and see if something comes up. So essentially, and then what I wanted to talk about on the podcast, no, it's giving me the fasting in the Bible. it's a book, it's by this guy, it's from like 1918 before they had penicillin.
Oh.
So let me ask you a question. If you have like a penicillin treated illness, in before penicillin, what do you do?
Die?
You die or you, you know, it gets worse. So essentially what they used to do is they used to fast people out of it. So this guy used to run these huge, I think they were called sanitariums, but it's basically like a fasting hospital. And he used to fast this thousands and thousands of people. And he wrote two books on the subject and it's the same book twice. And it's just a fascinating book. And, I guess I could find out what it's called and edit it back in here, but I can't remember it off the top of my head. But once you read that book, you understand what to do. And then once you understand what to do, you understand what also what not to do, which he goes deep into everything. And then you can fast all you want. You know what I mean? So I believe in fasting because it works. That's all. It works for me every time.
Do you need to do multiple days in order to have whatever effect that you're going for?
Well, it gets better every single day. The problems with fasting is day 4 and 5 are awful, except once you get used to it, day 4 and 5 are expected. It's kind of like putting on ski boots. Like it's a terrible, awful experience, but if you ski every day, you don't worry about your putting, you just put your ski boots on. You don't worry about how tight is all the like struggle, you know? And when I fast day 4 and 5, I don't worry about the struggle. When I'm hungry on day 2, I don't think to myself, oh, I'm so hungry. I'm like, okay, this is just what it is.
I have a question for you. So how long on tour were you fasting for?
4 days.
Okay. In those 4 days, you seemed very level-headed.
Yes.
Even in a arguably better mood.
Agreed. Yes.
How? I mean, because I don't eat for like 3 hours and I turn into a fucking monster.
Well, okay, so I'm doing this thing that I want to talk about on the podcast. It's this guy, Brian Johnson, is all over YouTube, and he's got this, like, eating, like, to make you younger thing that he's doing.
It's one of those.
And he let me into, I signed up for his cohort of his test, right? And I was like, there's no way I'm going to get let into this thing. And then I get an email, you are accepted. And I'm like, okay, now I kind of have to go through with it. And then it was, like, right when we're leaving for tour. And I'm like, how am I supposed to do this on tour? But I was like, all right, I mean, I signed up for this thing. I'm going to do it. And so I signed up. I joined the Discord and all the different things. And now I'm in this Brian Johnson blueprint thing that I should talk about with the fans, because it's interesting to me. I've done every diet. I mean, people have watched me over the years. 2018, I'm skinny. Go to the Camp Bisco videos. I am as skinny as I've ever been. 2014, people think I'm having a cheesesteak for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So I go up and down a lot in weight, and it's because I'm doing all these different kind of diets. I've done all of them. I've done all everything from the most vegan to the most meat.
Isn't that the yo-yo thing that like most diets warn you about? You know, of just like going up and down and up and down with the newest diet fad?
Yeah, they're all unsustainable. There's not a single diet that's sustainable in the America that we live in.
Okay.
The only diet that would be sustainable is if you move to the Mediterranean and just eat the food that's there. And that food is good for you because the breads don't have a bunch of sugar pumped in them, and the oils are very high quality, and things like olives and a little bit of red wine are actually good for you. So I can elaborate on all the different diets and the pluses and minuses of them because I've researched them all and I've been in all of them. And I'm going along with this Brian Johnson diet because I find his approach very interesting, because he goes through the tests and find out what's working. And he doesn't put anything else on the diet except for what's working. So there's no taste or flavor, really. I mean, he's got a little stuff, but it's not a high concern. What he's mostly concerned about is the things on the diet are effective in a real sense, not anecdotal, like you tell me a story, but actually you give it to 10,000 people and you get the result.
So what are some of the components of the Brian Johnson diet?
Olive oil is a big one. I joined the Brian Johnson diet, and then to do so, you have to get your blood work done. So on tour, so they send you this package. Of course, shows up the day after
Brian
I leave
Johnson
for tour.
Has your DNA.
Probably.
We
somewhere.
Can clone you.
He's probably
Brian Johnson's cloning you. We're going to have lots of
barbers.
There's
going to be so many jam bands tomorrow. So of course, I sign up for his thing. And of course, he's like, great, welcome aboard. And then sends me all the stuff. And of course, the stuff shows up the day after I leave for tour.
Oh, no.
So now I'm on the road and I'm sick. And I'm like, and we're in L.A. And I find out that the blood draw place is also in L.A. So, and they have one appointment at 7 a.m. And this is the day of the Fonda show. So the day before the Fonda show at Bob G, I decide I'm just going to start fasting. I'm just going to take, it's like 5 o'clock and I'm like, I'm just going to take this appointment at 7 a.m. and I'm just going to do the thing. I'm just going to wake up and deal. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, why do I want to wake up at 7 a.m. for this Brian Johnson guy? And I'm like, well, I'm just going to deal. I told him I'm just going to do it, right?
And so, you had a promise to Brian Johnson. You were going to keep it. Tour
why
or
not? I mean, how hard is it to wake up, right? So I basically stop eating at 6 o'clock, do my Baba G show, go back to the hotel. Now I'm sick, so I'm feeding myself ramen and oranges. And it isn't working. You know, I took a Z-Pack. It's not working. I'm still sick. So in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, you know, maybe this is the right time to fast, because I've been sick for 6 days and I have this crazy airport bug that won't go away. It's probably COVID and I can't get myself right. And, you know, when you try a Z-Pack and that doesn't work.
Right.
You,
that's what
you
know, I was going to say. Yeah.
You know, like I never have a Z-Pack, but on this occasion, I was like, I have to take a Z-Pack or maybe I lose the whole tour. You know what I mean? Like, I'm in the middle of tour.
Right.
I can't sing.
Right.
I got to do a Z-Pack because what if this gets worse, right? So the Z-Pack didn't work. The oranges don't work, and they were delicious California oranges. They should have worked. You could taste the vitamin C. They should have worked. And so I'm like, okay, I might as well just fast and do this blood work. And then the next morning, it's 7 a.m. It's raining. I'm at the blood work thing, and I'm like, I feel great suddenly. I have not.
You just didn't eat for 12 hours?
I did not eat for 12 hours, and I feel so much better, which is probably the oranges from 3 days ago kicking in. But I convinced myself that it was the fast. And so I actually ate a little bit of food after that because I wasn't planning on fasting, and I immediately felt bad.
But we're not even in fast territory right now. This is literally breakfast time.
Yeah,
you just breakfast. Hadn't eaten breakfast.
All I was doing was doing my blood work fast. Uh-huh. That's it. And then I ate a little bit of like a standard normal breakfast, which was just some like whatever was on the bus, like a granola bar. And I immediately felt bad again. And I was like, oh man, I guess I have to fast or I'm going to feel bad. And so I just decided to fast for a day or two. And then I didn't, and I stayed on the fast all the way to Colorado. I didn't, I stayed through Gem and Jam, and the mangoes at Gem and Jam were great. I was pissed I couldn't eat them. But I was feeling good. I was on the fast. I went all the way to Colorado. And then I was skiing one of the mornings in Colorado, and I hadn't eaten for a bunch of days. And when you ski, you there's a lot of altitude, there's a lot of blood pressure things that.
What about the energy that you need to ski? You can do that without nutrients?
Yes. I mean, look at me. I have blubber on my body. Like I could ski for a week on just my stomach blubber. You know what I mean? Like there's protein in there. There's everything you need is in there.
I feel
there.
Like that's more like hibernation blubber than skiing blubber.
Not, you're probably right. But so I decided I was skiing with these guys who I didn't want to faint in front of. So I decided to break the fast and eat before I skied. So because I didn't want to faint with people while skiing on the off chance that you're right, which you could be. And I didn't know. So I ate and I got off the fast. Also, you know, I was ever since I started, I just wanted to eat some food. I was in the mood, right? But that couple day period, Fonda, San Diego, Gem and Jam, the day after, all that stuff, I was fasted for all those days. And I was fasted basically through the Baba G thing too. So, and you thought I was fine. I played great.
You were a pleasure all tour.
So yeah. That monster, that huge 27 minute long.
I hadn't eaten in 3 days, yeah.
I mean, just that's the secret.
I mean, I remember no you for him. Not sleeping in college because your thing was that sleep was addictive, and
that was just me being like inquisitive about what right. The hell's going on in my brain. But
he's like a real life Kramer.
Now, but, yeah, but I mean, look, here's the thing about fasting. You are a fasting creature. You just don't know it because the fridge exists.
Sure.
How old is a fridge? 100 years old?
Yeah.
So literally everyone in the history of the world fasted every single year.
Ice boxes date back to 1813.
Okay, 1812. What it was he fasting when he wrote the 1812 overture? Yeah. Probably, right? Every single, so you know how because, to
so
do they, this.
So civilization was just hungry before we had.
What do you think prosciutto is? It's like, how do we get this right, ham sure. to last us right. a few months longer? I know I'm going to be hungry in a week. Cover it in salt.
Right.
It sure. won't go well, that, bad.
Yeah.
That's all it is. And so the whole, right. every
oh,
single.
It's already bad. Okay, we'll ferment it.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you understand exactly. So if you understand what the rules are, you can do this because your body already knows how to do it. It's been doing it for hundreds of thousands.
Okay. What about supplements? Do you do any supplements?
Well, yeah, I take a whole assortment of stuff. I mean, there's a whole pile of things. The whole Brian Johnson thing is he's going to give me his supplements, and I'm going to take his supplements. I'm not going to take mine. But everything I do is based around doctors and blood work.
Brian Johnson doesn't like anybody else's supplements, just his.
Yeah, he doesn't. Whew. Except for like if you have something like lithium, you know.
Give me your blood. Stay on and the lithium. Only eat this.
Yeah, yeah. He does do the blood thing with his kid, right? I'm preparing River for that.
What
I'm
like, blood? He has a blood boy? His he takes the son, blood out of the young?
His son is his blood boy.
For real?
Stop it, really?
I mean, he said it on YouTube. I didn't watch him do it, but he said it on YouTube like it was a thing of pride.
He's the blood boy. Holy God.
Oh, my God.
I mean,
God.
Honestly, bro, I trust Brian Johnson.
I mean, these tech guys are crazy. They have so much money, and they can't help anybody but themselves, so they got to do all this crazy stuff. But this guy's actually
he's a biohacker in tech. Is that the deal?
all the tech guys are biohackers because they've been given so much money by American capitalism that none of them want to die because they have more money than they could spend in their entire lifetime.
So this is the whole like age reversal thing that everybody's trying to do, right?
Yeah, yeah. They all want to they all want to live 100,000. They already have nothing to do and they want to live for another 80 million years.
Right.
I thought you were talking about the lead singer from AC/DC the entire time.
I mean, seriously, that guy's probably doing okay, too.
I mean, the other route for longevity is an extraordinary amount of British lager and heroin, I think. You know, Keith Richards is still going strong.
I thought you were going to say stem cell.
Oh, well, that too.
I've done stem cells in my shoulder.
Yes.
Yeah, but it were my stem cells. So sure. You have stem cells in your body. A rule of thumb is that every decade you're like a baby is like all stem cells, right? So the blood has a very high percentage of stem cells in it. And the way they measure it is like billions of stem cells per like milliliter of blood. Just so, I mean, how many cells are in a milliliter of blood? There's hundreds of billions, right? So how many of those are stem cells in the baby? It's very high. Every decade you're alive, it goes down by a factor of 10. So if you were to think about it, like, let's say you have a barn and that barn is blue and you have, let's say, a oil tanker filled with white paint and a gun to shoot the paint at the house. If you have a giant barn that's blue and you have an oil tanker filled with white, let's say you have 100 oil tankers, right? You could cover that blue barn with white paint, no problem. So when you get like a cut in your arm or your skin or something, stem cells get coated onto it like paint on a blue barn. And every decade that you're alive, your amount of paint goes down by a tenth. So you have 1/10 the amount of stem cells in your blood every decade that you get 10 years older. So right. When you're 30, you might have 1 billion stem cells per liter, a milliliter, whatever it is. When you're 40, you only have 100 million. When you're 50, you only have 10 million. When you're 60, you only have 1 million. Now, let's go back to the barn example. If you have 100 oil tankers filled with paint and a blue barn, and you need to paint it white, you can obviously do it with 100 oil tankers. But what about when you have 10 oil tankers? Okay, you can probably do it still. What about when you have 1 oil tanker? Well, now you're running out of paint maybe before you get to the end of the barn. What if you have 1/10 of an oil tanker? Now you can't even do more than one side of the barn. So this is why when you're older, you can't heal. Because there isn't enough paint to cover the barn blue anymore. So when you cut your tendon or your muscle or you break something, your body doesn't have enough stem cells to put on it to then fix what the injury is.
Right. Even the tiniest scratch now takes a while for it to heal.
Because your body's like, it's like, I need more stem cells. Let me get some out of your foot. Let me get some out of your knee. Let me get some just to fix a cut in your hand. Right. So that's what aging kind of is in some medical circles consider that to be aging. Do you have enough stem cells to fix something? So that's what the root thought of the blood boy thing is. There's other details to it, but that's the basic thought.
There was a service that was provided when we had our kids that would like harvest the stem cells and store them in if you ever need to come back to them for whatever develops like later in life. And we looked into it and it was definitely like an amazing concept of modern science. And there was something about it that just felt off, and it wasn't an ethical thing. It was like there were probably like a price factor, but like I think it was the way that they were like trying to sell it, the FOMO is real, right? Like this is the only time you can do it and you don't know what's around the corner and anything could happen. But if you had these, you're going to want them then, you know?
Well, I looked into that when River was born, because in the back of my mind, I was like, okay, you know, I want those stem cells. I want all of them.
You want Rivers?
Yeah, because I tore my shoulder, my guitar shoulder, and I had them pull the stem cells out of my blood and then shoot them into my shoulder. And then a month later, I was like, oh my God, my shoulder works. And before then, I couldn't lift my hand over my shoulder. After a month later, I was like, oh my God, my shoulder works fine. And that is basically what the stem cell treatment is when you're in LA and you go to the stem cell doctor. Now, if you go to Panama, it's different. It's somebody else's stem cells or something like that. It's like another thing. I've never done that. But river stem cells are probably pretty identical to mine, you know, from a cellular, like genetic point of view. So why can't I take his stem cells and shoot them into my shoulder and fix my shoulder? And they said that I wasn't allowed to do that. And then when I went down the questionnaire of what am I allowed to use, like what am I allowed to use his stem cells for? The answer was no to everything, including River using them on himself.
Oh.
So the reason that once you start asking questions on that philosophy is there's nothing that's useless. They're just,
you're
taking,
just paying for them to store it.
I don't
it.
Even think they store it. I don't even, I think they literally take your $5,000 and then they just close the door on your account. Yeah,
there was something very scammy about it.
I don't think there's like a bank of other people's stem cells anywhere. There's not a freezer with everybody's stem cells in it. It's literally somebody, they probably sell them to a black market, which they do anyways, right? So all that stuff gets sold probably to Panama on the black market. And yeah, you're not allowed to use your kid's stem cells for anything that might benefit you or your kid or your wife or anything. Cause I don't know why, but that seems to be what's going on.
So John, what's next in this Brian Johnson longevity program for you?
Well, I ordered the stuff. It comes in the next couple of days and then I start taking it. I stop taking my normal stuff, which is like omega-3s. I take red yeast rice for cholesterol. I take vitamins. I take, I don't know, I could run you through the list. It's a very small list. It's pretty basic. I don't go too crazy. I believe that if you get on the Peloton, on the bike, or some kind of workout every day, the most compelling evidence in the world is sleep good and work out at least 20 minutes on like a low heart rate, which is like 120 BPM, let's call it, and then 5 or 10 minutes at a high heart rate, which is like 135, 140, depending on your age. It's all online. You can find it. I don't even look at it that closely. I just get on the bike and pedal and then sit and play video games when I slow pedal. And that is a combination of the two. It might not be exact science, but I don't have to like look things up and calculate things. I'm just playing video games on the bike. That's all I'm doing. That's
sleep
my
well,
version.
Move your body, masturbate.
Yeah, and don't. Well, that's a whole nother thing we could get into. But well, it's the removal of the monkey brain from your conscious thought pattern.
Yes.
Which for me is actually, my monkey brain is so annoying. It's the worst, and it's all the time. I look for opportunities to remove monkey brain thoughts.
Yeah.
And, you know, meditation is a lot of work. It takes a lot of time. Not doing something is the easiest thing that you can do, frankly. Meditation, you got to sit down. You got to find a quiet spot. You got to hope that nobody walks in and thinks you're a weirdo. There's all these things that make meditating hard, especially on the road. I mean, there's nothing worse than meditating at like a crappy hotel, right? Like sitting on some plasticky sheets being like, oh, yeah, yeah, you know, in this room of corkboard furniture and bad carpets and weird smelling ugly towels and a TV that has four channels that when you switch between the channels, it goes black for 42 seconds. Have you ever noticed that?
It takes so long.
Why does it take so long to browse channels in a hotel?
I know.
It's an awful experience. It's like click. And then it's like, okay, getting the new channel up, loading the new. It's like, what is this?
It's buffering. It's all streaming.
It's awful. So, yeah, that's what I don't know where we are in the question. But, yeah, we could go for days on this subject, frankly.
I mean, this is what the people want. I'm going to shift gears to a musical question. I found this to be an interesting premise. And if I recall correctly, it might be something that you and Joey already have in the works.
Hey, Max. Love that you guys have a hotline. Hey, I'm here listening to my first episode of Touchdowns All Day, episode 55 on Revolution in Motion, chapter 2. Really liked at the beginning what you did, kind of comparing, you know, the Bellevue Wrecking Crew and honoring kind of, you know, the ballads of the past, you know, heroizing the villain, if you will. You know, my question would be, you know, thoughts from the band on kind of going going country, right? A little space cowboy. I know we've got the space opera going on and everyone's excited for that, but lots more to come from the Biscuits and, you know, even Beyonce's going country. So your comparison made me think back to, the Highwaymen. Some of the famous, country artists of the day, Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, Johnny Cash, Kris Kristofferson, you know, all great artists. Some of them great songwriters too. I thought that'd be really cool for the Biscuits to think about doing a little space cowboy action going country. Welcome any thoughts. Take care and appreciate all that you're doing. Looking forward to seeing the band at Silver Spring.
I have never once had that thought, but now I'm sold. That was a compelling argument to like just try it out. I don't know. I at least want to hear what it sounds like. I don't want to make any sort of effort to get that to happen. I just want to hear immediately what it would sound like.
So do I understand correctly that Joey has a concept for a sort of country themed composition?
Oh, I haven't heard anything like that. I don't know. Maybe he hasn't hit me with it.
You're talking about the King and Queen of New Jersey?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That rings a bell.
Right. There's the lyrics are very country for sure.
Okay.
The music won't be though.
And I thought that this was actually a really cool thing in the evolution of Joey Friedman as songwriter. He got really into this concept, right? And it came about pretty organically when we were just trying to like write something out of thin air, and recalled like this story of this DJ in Harrisburg that like a pretty prominent DJ for functions and whatever there. And then he got accused or arrested for murder from like 20 years prior or something like that. And so he used this crazy story from, you know, his past living in Lancaster, growing up in Lancaster, and tried to parlay it into a song. And then the characters quickly changed and the storyline quickly changed, but he was like, you know, developing a whole concept related song. And I was like, that's really cool. And for me, you know, helping to write the music with the space opera, having a story to write to is just awesome. You know, like, yeah, you can take something out of thin air, but like, you know, you need to then begin to focus it. Like, you know, even if you don't have a story, right, you got to sit down and what key is it in is probably going to be the first focal point of a song. And so it's just like, I don't know. It was cool to watch that like develop as a songwriter. And I don't think we've done anything with that. He went through a couple iterations of this like New Jersey couple, so every stanza would end with like, you know, because you're the king and the queen of New Jersey, and he was really psyched about it, and we were like,
we changed it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think what happened was I came up with a way to do it, and he came up with a different way to do it. We changed those lyrics and got better lyrics as always. And then, we just didn't agree on whose way was better, my way or his way. And we haven't had that like hangout where we usually his way is better in this kind of situation, or at least I'm more curious to see how his way ends up as opposed to mine.
Yeah.
So it's very possible that we'll end up doing it his way, but we haven't gotten a chance to like sit down and just like go through the two ways, and that's what's next, I think. But you know, that was in Tahoe, we talked about that, and right. That was of day one of 15 shows in 18 days, so I'm not surprised we didn't get around to it.
Right. I remember Joey like you know, bringing me aside in Tahoe and like, you know, playing for me like a dictaphone thing that he was like really excited about the next verse of this King and Queen of New Jersey. And then tour happened, you know?
Yeah.
But we were just like on a roll at that point, right? Because previous to that, we had no recollection.
Yes.
And then there's, I think the King and Queen of New Jersey is that one that like we have percolating that we never really pushed through.
I was going to try and pump it out, but we were like, what if we just squeeze this into the set? But where were we going to do that? It just never happened.
So apart from...
We'll get it. We'll get it next month. Or
apart from this song, any thoughts about the caller's idea of kind of leaning more in the country direction? As he said, Beyonce's doing it. You've been on her bus.
Has he heard country Sound One?
Oh.
Bake a cake. Wait, a show.
I mean, the list that person just listed off are... Yeah, I mean, I grew up listening to those guys. I think that we could make sets out of that stuff. We could do a country show or something.
That's always how artists like reinvent themselves. Oh, right?
Put on
like,
the cowboy
Ray
hat.
Charles does country, you know.
Bon Jovi, the Eagles, all have had number one albums in the last few years, long after their pop careers have kind of been in the past with going country. Maybe that's for you guys, the next step.
I mean, look, the Biscuits, all four of us are really jazz guys at heart.
Yes.
And to get us to play techno music has been hard enough to get people to not jazz and play techno.
Yes.
And now we're talking about getting people to not jazz and play country. And it's like...
More twang, boys. Yeah, more twang.
It's not going to be a quick experience.
It's unts twang.
But I think we could do like a Biscuit version of maybe classic... You know, like, I mean, we could probably just do Waylon Jennings and maybe one Eddie Rabbit song and do like a classic country thing. And it could be really cool. I could see that being really great.
Well, you know, I saw Daniel Donato recently, and in the middle of a very country themed set. He did a Biscuits jam. So he's finding a way to incorporate your sound into a more traditional country and or bluegrassy type sound. So maybe it could go both ways.
I mean, that's interesting that, you know, so you take somebody like Daniel Donato, right? You know, a Nashville cat, and he's got like, you know, some country in his bones, but he also like, you know, part of his, you know, coming about of a musician was listening to like the Biscuits and whatever like jam band stuff that he was exposed to, which I found out about when he called. Was he a caller into your show? Oh, an Instagram Live thing.
I used to do Instagram Lives when I was sitting in the studio because, you know, you got to get on it. I don't know. You got to do an Instagram Live. Yeah. Yeah. And he just like hopped on because he was just watching my
Instagram
Live. You
guys hit it off like immediately.
Yeah. He seems like he knows the Biscuits pretty well. Musically, I've listened to his stuff. And he seems to know a lot of the like stuff that he seems to have figured out some stuff that we've done over the years and integrated into his sound. We had a good conversation, so I'm sure he knows what he's doing. I think that the idea of doing, you know, a Disco Biscuit Daniel Donato show would be fun. Yeah. Or like,
he's a good guy,
up.
Man. I played with him for a weekend with Billy and the Kids in August.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, he's salt of the earth. You know, he's a good kid. He's a good player. He's got like a great attitude, and he was like a new friend after those couple of days for sure.
Cool. Yeah, that's great.
Amazing. All right, guys. This is a question I think, Aaron, very appropriate for you.
Hey guys, this is Amanda Carson from California. Just wanted to call and say that I love the revival of the podcast. All sorts of new energy, new hype. Great job. Also, love the incorporation of all the samples. Really cool add-in. A little idea or suggestion. Maybe you already thought of it. But I thought it'd be cool if you added in samples that appeal to the local population. For example, like when you play in Boston, you could do More Than a Feeling. In Kentucky, you could do My Old Kentucky Home. Or in Texas, you could do like Deep in the Heart of Texas. Just kind of mix it in randomly somewhere in the show. And then a question for Barbara. The ladies would love to know how Barbara's going to spend his 50th birthday. Day off from tour. Is he going to stay back in Buffalo or head to Louisville a day early? I'm planning to hit Louisville day early personally. Also, that's how you pronounce it, by the way. It is Louisville.
That is right.
Both of my parents are from Louisville. They actually have a condo there, which I'll be raging up before the show with some friends. So, hey, you should come over. We could do fader-style raging or family-friendly. Totally your choice. Anyway, can't wait to see what's next for you guys. I'm sure you'll continue to crush it, and I'll be there watching. Take care, guys. Sorry if you don't.
Thanks, Amanda. So who wants to go first? Aaron, why don't you go first with a response to Amanda's suggestion about these local themed samples?
So Thank you. I think that that is a great idea. I think that we have kind of been leaning into that as well, right? Like in Tennessee, in caves, at Caves in Tennessee a couple of years ago, we had...
Tennessee,
that's right. We've done some like Atlanta rappers in Atlanta. You know, the California sample in California, you know, that's pretty much the same thing as the Deep in the Heart of Texas sample. Yeah. What was her Boston suggestion?
More Than a Feeling.
More Than a Feeling. Oh, that's a good one. That's actually a really good idea. So we're playing in Boston on St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, my God.
I think it's St. Patrick's Day. Maybe I had this thought in a dream.
All guitar players, myself included, all know how to play More Than a Feeling on guitar. It is a requirement. You cannot try a guitar out in a guitar store without playing More Than a Feeling for at least a split second.
Great song, man. I'd play it.
Yeah. We could do that song and just do the whole thing.
I mean, it would fit very well within the sound, I think.
I think people in Boston would be like, oh my God, not this song again. But we would have fun.
Oh, that song rocks. I do most of that album.
You're on the 16th in Boston. The day
is that St. Patrick's Day?
The day before.
Okay. I wrote down an idea about like doing a Dropkick Murphy song because we're at like House of Blues and like that's their territory.
Totally.
You know, I thought that would be a nice like tip of the hat, but I don't really know much about the Dropkick Murphys other than House of Blues, Boston, St. Patrick's Day.
I don't even know if that's accurate. All I know is that House of Blues and St. Patrick's Day and Dropkick Murphys go together for some reason, but I don't know why.
Right.
I don't know why.
I don't know why either.
I don't even know why Dropkick and Murphy go together.
I don't Guinness. Even
know. Is that a Guinness thing?
I don't know. It made me say the word.
They must love Guinness. Does they have their own can of Guinness or something?
Turns out they're all Jewish guys from Long Island. They have nothing to do with Boston. They're not even Irish.
23andMe again.
Exactly.
Strikes again.
they were actually the inspiration for the Biscuits doing the thing that we did at Citizens Bank Park during the pandemic.
So, earlier in
the pandemic, they did pretty much exactly that. I don't know whether they were set up around second base. I think it was the outfield, actually.
Yeah, but it was at like a minor league baseball field.
No, it was at Fenway.
That's what I'm saying.
Took me a second.
Sorry, Boston. Just kidding. Just kidding.
But those are great suggestions.
Who watches baseball anyways? And I mean, come on.
Oh, do you know what we should do? Oh, be careful what you wish here with this idea. Ready?
Yeah.
Maybe we should keep a suggestion box open for sample suggestions, right? Where people can submit stuff. And like, honestly, I feel like even providing the file, but I don't know what the, because that's part of the battle for me is like getting the file, you know, I'm purchasing it because that's what you do.
We need you to bring your sampler on stage and press play. Right?
I want you guys to do all the work for me, including figuring out what would be the ideal moment to trigger that sample.
Yes.
But you know what? The idea of the Gwen Stefani No Doubt sample, what was it, Hella Good, came from a fan who I feel like I need to thank. He DM'd he was like, I would love for you guys to cover this. It was just a cover.
Great idea.
And I thought it was a great idea, you know, in the first place. So I listened to it. I remember this clearly. It was 3 days before the Boulder Theater show, and it was like day off, and I'm like recovering, and I'm looking at my Instagram after laying in bed for 8 wonderful hours. So he makes a suggestion and I look up the song immediately and I listen to it. And I was like, oh my God, this is going to be great. I go over to my keyboard to figure out like, you know, how the song plays out. And then I realize it's in G and I start playing Plan of Attack and it worked so well. And that was the impetus for, I guess what kind of became the whole Tractor Beam concept of like these mashups, right? Rather than just dropping a sample, like if we can figure out what harmonic similarities there are between what the sample is and an actual Biscuit song and do these kind of like, you know, two song mashups. And so I got excited. I made that happen. And then I was like, okay, let's try another one, and thought about our 200 and whatever song catalog. And I was like, what would be a good one? And then settled on Twisted because it has that downward progression, which is a common downward progression, right? So it ended up being the 25 or 6 to 4 sample.
Yeah.
I just like, for whatever reason, we put it in, you know, that show. It's just like, this is fun, let's do it. And, you know, it's pitched up like a fifth. So it's a little out of character of how you are familiar with that song, but it still kind of works. And it works beautifully over Twisted. Say again?
I think it's better up a fifth.
Yeah. You think it's better up a fifth. And there was a backup one too. Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You. Same like, you know, descending chord progression, right? Would work great over Twisted. But once I put 25 or 6 to 4 in, I was like, I already found it. Let's move on.
Yeah.
And then I think there was like another example. And then you guys were playing a Brownie Baba G show. And I was like, I won't send it to you guys tonight. And then the next day, I was like, what do you guys think? And it was like, oh my God, this is so fun. And then we play those two Boulder theater shows without having to think about it, and that became the spark that was Tractor Beam.
Amazing.
Yep.
Well, thank you to whoever it was who made that recommendation in Aaron's DMs. We'll hopefully Aaron will find that and give that person an official shout out. But John, Amanda's question for you: big birthday coming up, what plans do you have for celebrating?
Well, you know, Lisa asked me what I was doing on my 50th too. And look, we have to get from Buffalo to Kentucky. I'm going to be in an airport on my birthday. It's okay. Like, it's, I think I can have,
can we make you wear like a birthday costume or something so that everybody is wishing you a happy birthday as you traverse the airport?
I don't even need
the
happy birthdays. I think that I can have this big birthday blowout party that everyone wants me to have in a year or 2 years. Or I don't think it needs to be on a round number. I don't think it needs to be this year. I really don't. We had a huge party in Mexico, like literally 4 months ago. River had 3 birthday parties last week. Like, I'm good on parties, I think, for the meantime. I personally feel like we're in this kind of metamorphic place musically. And if I really want to have like some fun and go on like a vacation or something like that, it might disrupt what we're doing. So I'm not really, and you know, Amanda is this interesting person because when I did, you know, when the band was kind of on hiatus and I was living in LA, I managed to find a world where there were no Biscuit fans. And that was the Fader world, right? That was me and Dave and all of my California friends that I kind of like got in with all the Dave's friends. And then I met all the beach people and nobody had any idea who the Biscuits were. Literally everybody was like, I don't even know what you're talking about, except for this one girl who was at all the parties. And she would never say anything and she would never blow up my spot. And it was nothing. She'd never say anything. Maybe when I wasn't there, she would say something. But when I was there, she was cool. It was like normal. And I could just kind of be like one of the people. You know, it was a world for me where like in Colorado, when I lived in Colorado, I like worked out at this gym and I would talk to the person at the gym. They'd check me in and out every single day. I would go to the gym and then I would check out. And then when I was leaving Colorado, I was like, okay, you could cancel my membership. And the person who I'd been talking to going in and out of this gym every day was like, oh no, no more Disco Biscuits here every day. What am I going to do without my John Barber? And I was just looked at them like, you've known who I am this whole time. So in Colorado, that like it's a very weird vibe because there was a time period, at least in the past, like 2010 or something, where I felt like we were extremely famous. And in Philadelphia,
celebrity pancakes, man.
Yeah, we were like everywhere I went, everybody kind of knew who I was. I didn't know who anybody was, right? But they all knew who I was. So I found this place in LA where nobody knew who I was. And the one person was Amanda, and she was there at all the parties everywhere. I was like, oh, there's her again. And, you know, she's super cool and she never blew up my spot and she let me have my like few years of beach anonymity. But yeah, and then, you know, now she goes to every single show still. And apparently she did back then, too. So
yeah, Amanda's from way back in the day.
She goes forever. So when she's like, I think she's just trying to, you know, she just wants to hang out in Louisville and chill and you know, kick back and relax and talk about the fun times and everything. It's all good. It's all good.
Well, guys, I encourage people to call with questions, but also with stories, especially stories from the road. And this one I found to be particularly fun.
Hey, Max. Hey, Babs. Longtime listener, first time caller here. Wanted to follow up about some winter tour shenanigans. Also attended 8 of that first leg, Max. What a time. Still in the bubble. I had a great time. One of my favorite moments was in Santa Cruz. My crew and I happened to be staying at the same hotel as the band. Upon checkout, I had the concierge deliver a Smirnoff Ice to the room of the one and only Mark Brownstein. I want to know if he followed through on getting iced and what his reaction was to that. Otherwise, favorite highlight from Winter Tour, the Spacebird ending fully outroed into a nasty rock candy from Tahoe Night 2. Slaughterfest. Love that. Thanks, guys. Bye.
And that was Earth Jigsaw with that call. Do you guys happen to know, did Mark accept the challenge? Did Mark ice his ice? I don't even know how to say it.
I have no idea. Did he?
I can neither confirm nor deny.
All right, we'll have to follow up. And I also love that jam into Rock Candy. That was on our short list for our Jams of the Tour episode. Last second cut, but definitely everyone should give that jam a listen.
Is that Spacebird in the Rock Candy?
Yes.
Yeah, we almost
the end that. Of the first set, the second night in Crystal Bay.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah, this is good stuff.
All right, guys, Lily, our friend Lily, who was at many of the shows on the West Coast run, called in with some positive feedback on one of her favorite new songs.
Hey, Max and Barbara, this is Lily, and I just wanted to say hey and let you know how much I've been enjoying the recent podcast episodes. Yeah, just great, great stuff. Please keep it up. I know so many of us are loving it. I've been listening to the first few nights of tour so far, and I just have to say I'm pretty blown away by Fireball Exchange. I got to be there for the debut on New Year's, and just hearing only the second time the song has been played live, like it just sounds so fully fleshed out, and yeah, I think Barber's vocals are just kind of perfect for that type of song, which Joey knows I call that song a Chemical Warfare Brigade era love song. And yeah, I just am kind of blown away by how far that song has already come in such a short time. And yeah, can't wait to see where these newer songs go. Just exciting stuff. And love what you guys are doing on the podcast. And I'll see you soon.
So every once in a while, there's a new song that just seems like it could be the song that crosses the biscuits over. And I felt that way about Firewheel Exchange. I felt that way about other songs in the past. I'm sure you guys have as well. You've clearly got a gem on your hands here. What do you do with it? Is there anything special or extra, some sort of push? Do you biscuits recording in a different setting or context? Is it getting somebody else to guest on it? How do you get that song outside of the Biscuits jam band bubble?
Beyoncé would make this a great song. That,
oh my God, she would kill this
viral song. Exchange with the Cowboy.
Kill it. Honestly, I think I can't really hear a female vocalist on it, but I think the lead singer of Creed would crush this song. That guy, Creed guy.
Yeah.
Scott.
Yeah, isn't that his name? Something like that.
Somebody.
No, I don't. I mean, look, it's like is it a straight ahead rock song? Is it that? You know, I don't think so. I just don't think the way that 50 Cent explained it was that Mariah Carey is Mariah Carey because somebody spent $20 million making her Mariah Carey. And the reason that Mariah Carey isn't as hot as she used to be is because that $20 million isn't there anymore. That's the way that 50 explained it. He's like, Mariah Carey's the same person.
Yeah.
But the $20 million of her earlier career that was behind marketing every album is not in the new Mariah Carey album. So she's not hot anymore because she can't pay everybody to say she's hot, which starts the thing. So I would assume that the Biscuits doing a song, there's always been that thing with the Biscuits where the Biscuits fit in this wedge of like Napster bands where the record labels had just gone broke when we showed up and the streaming thing hadn't happened yet. And the Biscuits are a very risky proposition for a record label because we're just beyond control. Like, we just can't be controlled.
Yes.
We're not going to hit their genre moments. We're not going to sit in their record store where they want us to be, where our next album's going to sound totally different from our last album. So I don't know. I mean, I think we focus on making really great music and putting out the best versions of these songs that we can put out. And trying to, like, convince, you know, the greater media landscape that our stuff is worth, you know, their, you know, distribution or whatever you would call it, is just, like, it's kind of out of our control. And I just don't necessarily know if we have, like, a way to think about it or anything like that. Like,
well, what is in our control?
Does it matter to us?
Like, yeah. I mean, listen. It would really be nice at this point in our careers if we had a crossover hit, you know?
But crossover to what? Where does it go? Like, is it crossing over to your radio that no one listens to anymore? Like,
right.
Where does it go? Like, is it a viral TikTok moment? Like, probably. What is it?
A commercial?
Like a Jaguar commercial or something?
I'd fucking sell Firewall Exchange to Jaguar. Move over Matthew McConaughey. Here comes Firewall Exchange.
I mean, I guess so. I mean, I guess there's a point where, like... Okay, let's picture the commercial, right? Mm-hmm. She's there. She's burning down this guy's house. He gets out of the house while it's on fire.
Jaguar.
Gets into his Jaguar. Drives away scot-free.
Yeah, clean getaway.
Clean getaway, Jaguar. I could see that. I could totally picture that. I think that sells a lot of Jaguars.
Listen, to make this actionable, though, you know, we can, number one, record it, which is definitely on the to-do list for 2024. And then we would probably put it out in some way, shape, or form, likely through the means that we have right now, which is, you know, you put it out on all the providers and then it starts going out there. But it is up to, you know, the fan base to really be the preachers of this band that they are so passionate about, you know, that we have always been so passionate about, and to kind of carry that torch to the greater whatever. So those are the things that we can kind of, you know, control. We can record it, we can put it out, and we can tell people to listen to it and tell other people.
And the fans can go crazy over it and play it over and over and over again and share it with their friends and stuff. These are things that could actually happen.
Yeah.
And these are things that we should, you know, be reminding people to be doing as we're putting out this album. You know, we spent 2 years making this album and we're really proud of it. And it hasn't even come out yet, you know, though we have been playing these songs and we have more songs that we haven't even recorded yet that we're also playing that might even be better. But we have this album that's coming out, and tell your friends, you know, this is how we're able to do what we do year in and year out, which is now becoming decade in and decade out. And I feel like I've got another decade in me, you know?
I mean, look, if Firewall Exchange somehow made a huge amount of money, then we would definitely have another decade.
It would give us more impetus, for sure.
It would definitely be cool. But apparently we have to date someone on the Chiefs.
Oh, yeah.
If we want the song to be popular, because there is no music business anymore. There's just the Chiefs. You have to...
Oh, date somebody on the Chiefs.
Yeah, that's what you do at the upper end of the business. There's no radio to release into anymore. You just basically date a professional athlete or a TV star, like Fran Drescher. Like, somebody needs to date Fran Drescher.
Listen, I'm not sure whether I would date Fran Drescher, but there's definitely people that, you know, I would date if it would, you know, be okay with my wife, number one. And number two, help the Disco Biscuits, which I think my wife would be, you know, good for. So I've always had a thing for Miley Cyrus, you know.
Like Roseanne Barr. Would you date Roseanne Barr?
No, her political views would drive me fucking crazy. Just listening to that voice, you know.
Guaranteed the Biscuits reached the entire Fox News audience.
Then yes.
Country music.
You know who just got
Roseanne Barr.
You know who's single from Arrested Development?
The band or the TV show?
The TV show. There's a band called Arrested Development?
Yeah, Tennessee. We were talking about it earlier.
On another podcast?
No.
No, the woman from Arrested Development. She was
a sister?
No, the hot one. She was married to
Ellen.
Joe Mangione. She was married to, like, the hottest guy in Hollywood. And they got divorced because 7 years, you got to get divorced in Hollywood. You can only stay married for 7 years in Hollywood.
You're not talking about
unless you're Tom Hanks.
You're talking about Modern Family.
Modern Family. Yeah, yeah. The same show in my mind. Is it not the same show?
No.
I know there's 30 Rock and then there's all these other shows.
The Colombian actress?
Yes.
That's who you're referring to? Oh, yeah. She was just in, I watched this whole.
Yeah, Sophia Vergara. She's single. She's single.
She's single. She was just in, what is it called on Netflix where she plays like the Black Widow, it's not Esperanza. It's like the name of this notorious Miami coke dealer from the 80s. No,
you've arrived.
None of this is ringing a bell.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've arrived at the portion of the podcast where three men in their late 40s try to remember the names of actors in television programs. Guys,
I was in the TV Guide last week.
It is weird, though, that she plays Peggy Bundy, right? That's weird. Is that not weird? They did that on purpose, right?
Are we talking about the same woman? The Sophia Colombian Verraga. Actress plays yeah,
I don't
Peg
know if she's
Bundy?
Colombian.
That is not true.
Is she Colombian?
No, Peg Bundy was played by the woman from Rock Lobster.
Yeah, no, the woman from Rock Lobster. What the Rock Lobster?
Oh my God. From the B-52s. Oh yeah. Love Shack. Come on. All right, guys.
Come on.
Back to our earlier theme of children.
Let's stay focused.
Barbara, this is Lori. My super Lori. Can you come to my house and babysit me? And a dance party with me and play with my toys and do a dance party at Rage with you and you can play guitar.
Amazing.
We'll let Joey know that after he's taking care of the other kid, he can go over and have a dance party with Lori.
Joey daycare, man.
I mean, her and River would get along great. I mean, they would really hang. River says the same thing. Even the line about the toys, River will say, because he just, I'm sure, you know, that's just what kids are like. They're so great.
All right, back to the music. Christina had a question about favorite periods in the band's history.
Hey, Max. Christina Caldwell here. I've been asking a lot of people this, and I just want to know your all's opinion. What is your favorite era of shows to listen to? Everyone's been talking about 2007 and 08. I just want to hear what you guys think.
1974.
Thanks. Doing what you do, y'all are crushing.
The One Drummer.
Pre-hiatus One Drummer, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, look, we're not really, we listen to the newest stuff. That's what we do. We listen to the newest versions of the song. We do go back and listen to jam moments, but the year on that jam moment does not matter to us. We listen to jam moments for the content of the jam specifically. And so, for instance, To Be Continued, that jam was from like 2001 or something. I don't even
2008.
Know. 2008. Oh, is it from 2008?
Yeah.
See, I don't even know, but I do know that we wanted to listen to that jam because we wanted to write over it. So a lot of times, you know, for us, it's kind of like asking, you know, like a basketball team, like what basketball do they watch? You know, it's like they watch film of themselves playing so they can get better type of thing. I think it's very much where the Biscuits are at right now.
Does Brian Johnston make you wear that thing that you're wearing on your wrist?
Yes.
That reads all your pulse and whatever?
Yes, the Fitbit, yeah.
Did he send it to you and say, don't tell anybody else, but wear this every day?
No, he gave me like a list of like five Fitbits I could choose or five different kind of wearables that I could choose. And me knowing that a wearable for me is a piece of garbage that's going to end up in a garbage can, I just picked the cheapest one, which is the Google Fitbit. And I don't think this is necessarily a bad device, but if you lose the charger, it becomes garbage a lot faster.
Proprietary charger.
It's the worst. Yeah, uh-huh. It's this thing. It sticks on the thing. So I got home from tour, and I'm like, okay, I'm home from tour. I want to make sure I get caught up on the Brian Johnson stuff. And I know wearing this is essential, and it's dead because I brought this. I brought the charger on tour, but I forgot this. Right. So I get home from tour and this being the wearable to everyone listening. Right. So I got home from tour and there's the wearable. It's been sitting on my counter for 2 weeks. It's dead or 3 weeks. And then I can't find the charger cable because the charger cable is underneath all these cables. So I literally just got it going the other week. I don't know. I haven't hooked it up yet to see what information it has figured out about me. And so I don't want to comment on whether or not it's good or not.
Brian Johnston knows that information.
Oh, he does. He uses this other one called the Whoop, which is like $40 a month plus four. It's like the most expensive wearable ever. And he does it so he gets a, like an accurate sleep score.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like crazy about the sleep score thing. I guess there's value in it. But I don't see a group of people who aren't sleeping. So I don't know why they think they know so much about sleep, you know, but I haven't looked at the data yet. These guys are very smart, so they probably have looked at the data on some level.
Well, Christina, I'll say I do love those 2007 shows, and coming back to seeing the band after many, many decades of being completely out of the loop, I went to some of the more knowledgeable fans, Andy Bazzani, Mike Walsh, people we've had on Touchdowns All Day. And I asked them, what do I need to catch up on? And they all recommended fall 2007. And I've never been let down by a show from then. I especially love the show from November 4th, 2007. There's a drop into Abyss from A Sea to B that is one of my favorite hype tracks to get me going in the gym. All right. This is one that I think it was coming up all tour. Magner, you got to account for this.
Hey, this is Tom Whiting, longtime listener, second time caller. My question is, when are you guys actually going to play Life During Wartime? Because it seems like you tease it almost every show. I've been noticing lots of teases all over the place. I don't know if that's something you guys are purposely doing or not. But shows have been amazing. I feel like they keep getting better and better each night. And just keep doing it. Can't wait to see you guys in a month.
Okay, so before you answer this, there was a rumor going around, I have no idea if this is true, but that you play Life During Wartime teases when you're angry at Barber because he hates that song.
I don't even know what song it is. What song is it?
Talking Heads, Life During Wartime.
Oh, I don't even know.
Some peanut butter to last a couple of days.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I know this one.
You did a heavy, heavy tease of it in Crystal Bay, and I think a few other times during the tour, maybe a little more subject to interpretation.
Is it a known fact that you don't like that song?
No, people think that I don't like Talking Heads because I made a comment that Talking Heads are a pop band to me because they're not like a band. That, like, when I grew up, I was painting houses, and when I painted houses, we listened to Howard Stern all morning, and then it turned into K-Rock, and it was Talking Heads plus Led Zeppelin. It was pop, right? And to me, the Talking Heads are a band in that world, and all of these songs have gotten an incredible amount of spins on those radio stations. But I think in the jam band scene, the Talking Heads have been legitimately turned into kind of a more progressive art project because maybe they are, you know, I'm not the arbiter of what is what. And so people think that I hate the Talking Heads because I just don't hear them that way. I hear them as a pop band that I used to paint houses to in between the Cars and like Madonna's or whatever, you know.
And covering Talking Heads is about the least original thing a jam band can do. I mean, it's pretty much part of almost every other jam band's repertoire of covers. So not covering the Talking Heads makes the Biscuits a little unique.
Right. I mean, they're fun grooves to play. And you know, it's pretty much just the groove. And then, you know, the fun way that he delivers those vocals and the fun words and everything like that. Right. But it once you get the lick, you know, it's in your vocabulary, and we play improvisational music, and sometimes we'll fall into like a pocket where a, you know, Talking Heads lick works perfectly over it. So that was the only, play Life During Wartime if I'm pissed at you, because I know you don't like it.
I don't care. I just like picture my mom like dancing in the kitchen when I'm 14 when I hear that song. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I think of. I think of Pat Gutwillig just hanging out, but doing her like little Pat dance in the kitchen to "This Ain't No Disco." And my mom like, like, does it make me feel like I'm at a cool rave or something like that? But, you know, everybody has different experiences in life. Everybody has different things.
Well, Aaron, I think I asked you, it might have even been about that while we were on tour. And you said, sometimes it's just there in front of me.
Right.
Like a song or a riff or a tease just kind of presents itself to you.
Right.
And who are you to deny it? As opposed to, you're like, you know what? Barber ate the last Nature's Valley bar. I have my eye on that. Here comes Talking Heads. Yeah. He hasn't eaten in days. He hasn't masturbated in months. And I'm going to push him over the edge with some David Byrne. Well, guys, I feel like we've done enough of this. We've taken so many questions.
We've said it all,
as Howard Stern says. Thank you so much, Aaron and John. And thank you all for calling in with your questions. 424-666-SIYD. Or you can hit us on all the socials, touchdowns all day. At Barber Shreds, at FY Maxwell. You know how to get in touch with us. We love hearing from you guys. Thank you so much for listening. You are the reason we do all of this, and we can't wait to see you back on the road real soon. John, Aaron, thanks, and we'll see you next time, guys.
Thanks, Max. Love it.
All right.
Bring your samplers to the show.
I love patches for everybody just to plug in. You have an idea, just like, you know, press the button and hope that it makes a good one, because you'll be judged.
If you want to really get under my craw, drop some Talking Heads samples.
Full.
I'll get so fired.
I don't like the way Barbara played last night. I'm going to sample. lead us out with some Talking Heads, Max.
Oh yeah, the band wants to play the theme song.
Touchdowns All Day is an Osiris Media production. Rate and review us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're at it, share an episode with a friend. We would love to grow the audience for this podcast and grow the audience for the Disco Biscuits, but we can't do it without your help. Check us out at touchdownsallday.com and use the hashtag touchdownsallday on all social platforms. You could reach John at Barber Shreds, and I'm at FY Maxwell on Instagram and X. You could also get us at TDAD Baby on X, or better yet, want to hear your voice on a future listener feedback episode? Call the Touchdowns All Day hotline, 424-666-SIYD. That's 424-666-7493. This episode was written, produced, and edited by me, Max Dawson. Thanks to Crunk Mike and Osiris Media for production support. Our photographer is the one and only Tara Gracer. I'd like to offer special thanks to Mark, John, Aaron, Allen, and the entire band, Ben Baruch and Andrew Kaplan at 1111 Management, Andy Bazzani, and Mike Walsh, The Biscuits Internet Project, discobiscuits.net. We get our audio support from Rich Steele and Drew Granicelli, and we get help on the road from the entire road crew. Special thanks to Joey Friedman and Steve Martocci, to our spiritual advisor, Scott McClintock at Think Tank Dubs. And as we do every episode, I like to give the most heartfelt thanks to the people behind the scenes without whom none of this would be possible, and those are Lisa Gutwillig, Deb Brownstein, Jelly Magner, Sandra O'Quinn, Andrea Rivers, and Avery McMahon. Love you guys. On behalf of John Barber, Crunk Mike, and the entire Touchdowns All Day family, this is Max Dawson saying, see you next time. Hey, and one last thing. Coming up next, episode 59, part 4 of Touchdowns All Day's
4-part miniseries on Revolution in Motion, and a little spoiler, a little post-credits spoiler for those of you who stuck around. It's actually a 5-part series. See you guys in New York.
Cyrus.